We'll begin by reading chapter 57, verse 1, starting out. The righteous perish, and no man lays it to heart. And merciful men are taken away, none considering that the righteous is taken away from the evil to come. He shall enter into peace. They shall rest in their beds, each one walking in his uprightness. But draw near hither, ye sons of the sorceress, the seed of adulterers, and the whores. Against whom do you sport yourselves? Against him whom do you whom make ye a wide mouth and draw out the tongue? Are you not the children of transgression, a seed of falsehood? Inflaming yourself with idols under every green tree, slaying the children in the valleys under the clefts of the rocks, among the smooth stones of the stream is your portion. They are thy lot. Even to them hast thou poured a drink offering. Thou hast offered a meat offering. Should I receive comfort in these? Upon a lofty and high mountain have you made set your bed. Even thither went thou up to offer sacrifice. Behind the doors also the posts have they set up your remembrance. For you have discovered yourself to another than me, and art gone up. You have enlarged your bed and made you a covenant with them. Thou lovest their bed where thou saw it. And thou wentest, I hate these words, it's hard to read them these and thou's things in there. And thou wentest to the king with ointment, and did increase your perfumes, and did send thy messengers afar off, and did debase thyself even unto hell. Thou art wearied in the greatness of thy way. Yet saidest thou not, there is no hope. Thou hast found the life of their hand, therefore thou wast not grieved. And of whom hast thou been afraid or feared, that thou hast lied, and have not remembered me, nor laid it to your heart? Have not I held my peace even of old, and thou feared me not? I will declare your righteousness and your works, for they shall not profit you. When you criest, let thy companies deliver you, but the wind shall carry them all away. Vanity shall take them, but he that putteth his trust in me shall possess the land, and shall inherit my holy mountain, and shall say, cast you up, prepare the way, take up the stumbling block out of the way of my people. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabited eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in a high and holy place with him that also with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. For I will not contend forever, neither will I be always wroth, for the spirit should fail me before me and the souls which I have made. For the inquiry of his covetousness was iniquity rather of his covetousness was I wroth and smote him. I hid me and was wroth. And he went on frowardly in the way of his heart. I have seen his ways and will heal him. I will lead him also and restore comforts to him and to his mourners. I create the fruit of the lips. Peace, peace to him that is afar off and to him that is near, saith the Lord, and I will heal him. But the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked. Now we'll go back and break this thing down because this is a beautiful chapter. And this is talking about some things, and I want to don't get ahead of myself. I'll just tell you as we go through it again. The righteous or the just perishes, and no man takes it to his mind. That's what really happens. The righteous perish, and no one really thinks about it. Do they? Don't care. There's more coming. Just let them go. And merciful men or good or kind men are taken away, and none considers. The word considers there literally means they don't understand. They don't understand why the good and kind and the just people are taken away. And they're not even concerned in any way about it. Considering that the righteous or the just man, that good and kind man, is taken away from the presence of, not from the presence of evil to come, it should say just from the presence of evil. The words to come is added words. Look at it, they're italicized. You don't have to be a student to understand that those italicized words just aren't there. They're added in. So he took them away from evil. So when someone passes from this earth, all they're doing is leaving from the realm of evil. So why are we upset? You know why? Because we're jealous.
Couldn't that be while they're taken on here? While we're still here on here?
Well, but that's not where we're going with this, okay? It could be, I guess. I just never thought of it that way. Haven't got it worked that out. But he says, you know, he's taken from the presence of evil. Okay, but he was talking about them dying and going on. When we leave people, when people leave us here, don't we get hurt? Because we don't want to let them go. We're selfish. We don't want to let them go. But in loving them, what should we do?
Bye.
Come back and get me when you can.
Yeah. You
yeah, you're ahead of me. You won the race, you know. You're ahead of me. And see, in our carnal thinking, we think we've lost something, but they have gained. See, we feel the loss, they have gained. So what are we worried about? Everybody on the face of the earth has to die. This is the realm of death. Everything dies. So we shouldn't be concerned with it.
We die daily.
That's what Paul said. We're in the process of dying. Verse 2, it goes on and says, he shall enter into peace. See, when they're taken away from here, where are they going to enter? Jesus said, I am peace. That's the Christ speaking out of him. They shall rest in their beds. We're not talking about graves. Okay, they're going to be in the presence of rest with him. Each one walking or living in his uprightness or in his integrity. His integrity is what the language literally says. Now, who's he talking about there? That those first couple verses.
Good people?
No. Good people.
Righteous.
The righteous people. The just people. The compassionate people. Okay? Now the context changes. And he says, but draw near, ye sons of the sorceress. That's what he was talking to back there. Okay? You sons of the sorceress. The word sorceress is something that covers up hiding, deception, all that. The seed of the adulterer, the unfaithful, and the whore. And that word whore speaks of someone who is overfed and therefore immoral because they have they got everything they want. And that's where we're at in this world today. People have so much in this country that they are so complacent with what God has blessed us with, it has turned from a blessing to a cursing because we have so much. And we look down on somebody because they don't have very much. And you know what? They're looking at us and saying, I wouldn't trade for the world.
Can you say they're spoiled?
We're spoiled brats, absolutely.
This is the time of year.
It gets spoiled worse. It really shows up now, doesn't it? Okay, he said, verse 4, against whom do you sport yourselves? This is the question. Whom are you sporting yourself against when you're mocking somebody else and living in this wanton lifestyle? Who are you really sporting yourself against? Your own flesh and blood? We're all from the same flesh and blood. See, we're taking against our own kind, as some people might not agree with that, but that's our own kind, isn't it? Yeah, sure it's a prejudice, but you're doing it to yourself. Against whom make ye a wide mouth? Who are you talking about? Who are you slandering? And drawing out the tongue. Who are you doing this tongue, slashing people's throats, cutting their heads off? Your own family, your own brothers, your own sisters. Are you not children of transgression, or literally rebellion, the seed of not falsehood, but untruth and lies?
Liars.
See? The seed of lies. And it comes from within us. And we're not talking about two classes of people here. We're talking about one person that has the double-minded man.
The devil?
Probably not in the context here.
Well, he's the father of all lies.
Uh-huh. And that devil being the carnal mind is exactly what we're talking about. But when you say that word devil to most people, they think of that guy with the pitchfork and horns and the big long pointy tail and a red flannel suit. He lives in that 7-inch space between her ears. It says, you're inflaming yourself with idols under every green tree. So every facet of life that you have, you're inflaming yourself or setting yourself on fire, right? With idols. So when we have idolatry in our lives, it brings fire in our lives. Would you agree to that? Anything can be an idol. It could be our possessions, our families, our friends. We can have anything can be an idol. It's the way we think about it is what makes it what it is.
Our thoughts is the worst idol.
two people could have possessed the same things, and to one it's an idol, and to the other it's nothing. But they possess the same things. It's the way you think about it, okay? And the thoughts is the greatest idolatry that we have in our lives. Think that our way of thinking is the only way is right. And it's not easy to say, I could be wrong. But there's very few people that can really say, hey, you know, I might be wrong. I need to look at this again. And that's what he's talking about. We need to be of that broken spirit and contrite heart, you know. We need to be able to say that. And if we can't say it, we've got a long journey. A longer journey, I should say, than what we'd like to have. But everybody's got a journey. And slaying or sacrificing the children in the valleys or the lowest places, under the clefts of the rocks, like in a fortress of security. You know what the great fortress and security is? We're called a piece of the rock, are we not? So we slay all those things that we could be birthing, those wonderful thoughts out of us. We're slaying them under this rock here we're hiding behind. Saying, oh, he's my rock. Yeah, but he wouldn't be sacrificing babies on it, would he? See, that's natural. Spiritually, we're sacrificing all that birthing of those thoughts of the Christ within us. See that? Can you see what I'm saying?
You're sacrificing the good thoughts.
The thoughts of God. The seed comes up and it's got to start going, and we're cutting them down, you know. That's why he said let the wheat and tares grow together for a while. We'll separate them when the time comes. Don't be too quick to cut them down. You'll uproot the good seed. Okay. Among the smooth stones of the stream is your portion. Tell me something. What's the lowest place in a valley?
The creek.
And them stones are down on the bottom, those smooth stones. Your portion is the lowest portion. See, everyone's going to be in the kingdom, but everybody's not going to have the same reward. That's all there is to it. It's just not going to be the same reward. Proverbs 17:2, a wise servant will have rule over sons that cause shame, and he'll have part of the inheritance among the brethren. It goes on and says, these are your lot. Those stones, that's your lot, to be with the stones. If you want to continue to be in deception and falsehood and transgression, go ahead, but your possession, your position is going to be with the lowest place in that kingdom. It's going to be in the kingdom, but you're going to be in the lowest place. To them hast thou poured a drink offering. You want to worship your stones in this lowest realm? Go ahead. Go ahead and do it. You have offered a meat offering, okay? A meat or grain offering, what I should say. Should I receive comfort in these? God saying, should I be comforted because you're worshiping your idols? I don't think that's what he wants you to do. Upon a lofty or an elevated or an arrogant, is what means the word means, and high mountain have you set your bed. Said, you've made it up there on this high, lofty place. And didn't he say in the new covenant, if you exalt yourself, I will abase you. But if you abase yourself, I will exalt you. Okay? Even there wentest thou up to offer sacrifice. You know what the sacrifice for that was? The Passover and the Pentecost. They went up, that's for their sacrifice. They went up on the mountain to sacrifice that Passover experience. I said Pentecost shouldn't be, just Passover. Behold the doors, should be the door, and also the post hast thou set up your remembrance behind the doors. They've set it all up behind the door. Behind the door, what would that speak to you in saying?
Hiding, secrecy.
Huh? Hiding, secrecy, deception, hidden, all these thoughts we can see about. You've done everything in secrecy. You don't want anybody to know, okay? Because you have not discovered, but you have revealed yourself to another other than me. And see, that's what we do. We reveal ourselves to ourself and no one else behind the doors. We know who we are behind the door, don't we? But when we come out in public, we're somebody else. See? But we've revealed ourselves to somebody other than the Christ who we really are, the God within us. And you are gone up and you've enlarged your bed and made you a covenant with them. Okay? You loved their bed where, and let me see the root, this word where you saw it. Just a second. I need to see something here. Okay. It says, you loved their bed where you saw it. But that word where is an unusual word for that. It's the word yod, which means hand. Okay? Literally, what it's trying to say, it speaks of a phallic symbol. And it also says you agree with their ways of unfaithfulness. There's a lot of depth in some of these words.
That was in
the word where.
Where?
Yeah.
Yod.
Yeah. Yod, Y-A-D. And you went to the king with ointment. The word went is another word that makes it a little different. It didn't just mean you traveled. It says you traveled as a harlot.
The NIV says you went to Molech.
Well, that's an idol, see? I mean, that's an idolatry and harlotry, meaning the same thing in symbolism. But you traveled as a harlot, so when you went to the king of this realm, whatever realm you're in down here, when you go to that realm and worshiping of self and everything, you're revealing yourself to somebody as a harlot because you're not even faithful to that. You're only there as long as you're not pressured. Get pressured enough, what will you do? You know, just like, who was it? Jonah. He wasn't going to go, but God put enough pressure in his path, and what did he do? He turned around and went back where he told him to go in the first place. Would have been a whole lot easier had he listened, wouldn't it? He wouldn't have had to take that little sea cruise.
But, you know, it seems like God went to a lot of trouble to get Jonah to do something.
Well, he wanted to show you how we are.
But that's what I'm saying. If God would go to the trouble of giving Jonah special treatment, if he's no respecter of persons, isn't he responsible to interfere in a person's life to the point that that person does what he wants?
No. Wait a minute. God had a...
With Saul, and that happened with Jonah.
Yeah, but see, not everybody is on... He loves everybody, but everybody doesn't have the same mission in life. Some of them have something. He used Jonah and Saul. He used those as examples for us. Like all the Old Testament stuff was examples for us. Paul said everything that's written in the Old Testament was written for our learning and instruction. So he put him there for that. And he said, okay, if I ask you to do something, and here's what I'm getting out of what Jonah went through. Jonah, I want you to go to Nineveh. I don't want to go to Nineveh. I want you to go there and preach. I don't want to go there. Okay, go wherever you want to go. So he jumped on a boat and took off. Well, God created a sea problem out there so bad, everybody said, it's got to be you, Jonah, because we know we're doing what we're doing right. It must be you. So they pitched him overboard. He didn't let him die. Let the big fish swallow him up. Let him lay in there for 3 days and brought him back and dumped him back on the beach. Worse for wear, but still there. And he said, you know what? I think I remember what God said now. I think he wants me to go to Nineveh. I'm on my way, Lord. He still didn't learn his lesson. He still murmured and complained and got upset under the gourd and murmured and complained about it. And the gourd died and wasn't enough shade. And see, that's just showing humanity is hard-headed, stiff-necked, like he's told us all along. We do things the hard way.
But if everybody's saved, why did God want to send the Nineveh when the Ninevites were saved anyway?
He was setting up patterns. Mm-hmm. He was just setting up. The whole Bible is parables.
Yeah, but Saul's experience on the Damascus Road, that was the New Testament.
Mm-hmm. Was it?
Well, yeah, it was written in the New Testament.
It was a crossover period in the book of Acts.
In the book of Acts.
Yep.
So, you know, if God took the time to intervene in Saul's life, Paul said he was the chief of sinners.
Mm-hmm.
Well, doesn't God also owe it to the least of creation to intervene in such a dramatic way?
Well, let me ask you a question.
I mean, who could resist the blinding light?
Yeah.
Yes, Lord, even say.
Yeah. Okay.
What is this? He said, yes, Lord, whatever you want me to do.
Yeah. He knew who he was talking to because he'd already seen it. Mm-hmm. He seen it when Stephen died in Acts 9.
Yeah.
See, he was there. Saul was holding their coats while they stoned Stephen to death. He saw something go down. That man went to the third heaven. So he saw some experiences that changed him down the road. God was showing him something. And God has shown us all things all our life that we've ignored. He set up stop signs and directions that we just go right, blowing right on by and don't pay no attention to. And everybody can't be first fruit. And right now, first fruit is being harvested. When the first fruit gets done, then everybody gets their turn, every man in his own order, okay? I hope that it helps answer your question, but it's about God doing what he wants in his order, every man in his own order, in God's order, not in our order. So that's the whole deal. And I can see where you could be saying, well, why not? And I've asked the same questions, but I understand now that God has a pattern, he has a plan, and he has the first fruit first, and then he'll have a big harvest, and he'll even have the gleaning to get them all. But it's got to be in God's timing, not ours. Okay? That answer it for you a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Like I said,
It's okay. Where did I leave off at? Nine? No. Yeah, it says, you went as a harlot to the king with ointment and did increase your perfumes, or your apothecary, and you did your send your messengers afar off, okay? As far as you could, anyway. So whenever God was sending them messages, he didn't want them. He sent them off. Okay? Like I said, running by the stop signs and the directions, we just run right by them with our minds shut off to seeing or hearing what God's saying to us. And didst debase or humiliate yourself even as far as what? The word is what, the last word?
Sheol.
It's Sheol.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the grave. So it means you're never going to learn. Like Larry the Cable Guy had it right. You can't fix stupid. It goes all the way to the grave. You know, if you're going to wrestle with God all the way to the grave, then he'll take it to the grave with you. But eventually, you're going to get changed when it's his timing. Verse 10, you are wearied in the greatness of your way, or your course of life. He said, your life is beating you to death. Your lifestyle is beating you to death in this world. It's meant to. It's not supposed to be easy. And that'll make you, just like Jonah, go back the way God told you to go. Your lifestyle is supposed to be that way. Yet you saidest thou not, there is hope. You have found the life of your hand. You know what that really should say? You found the life of your power. Your power to make a decision. Therefore, you was not grieved. You could say, I can do it myself. The ego of man. I can do it. See? I don't need God. I can do it. But that's where most of the world is. They think they can do it in themselves instead of God. And of whom have you been afraid or feared that you have lied and have not remembered me? Well, that's humanity. Nor laid it to your heart or your mind. You never really put it in your mind to think about. Most people would rather just push it on off. You touch a sore spot and I'm through. I don't want to talk anymore. Have not I held my peace even of old? Well, the word old there should say from the beginning. I've held my peace from the beginning. God knew we were messed up from the day he created us, because he created us. And he wanted us to experience something. Now, why does he want us to experience it? Well, if I tell you something, you're not going to believe me until you experience it for yourself. And it's no longer what Dave says to you, but it's what you have experienced. Now it's yours. That's why Paul could say, this is my gospel now. Because he experienced that gospel. He went through the same thing just like Jesus did all the way unto death, didn't he? He experienced it, and that's the way you know something. You can get an intellectual understanding, but you don't have a knowing until you experience it. It's the only way into the kingdom is experience. It's not easy, but that's the way you got to go. Jesus said, if you don't suffer with me, you'll not reign with me.
Well, it becomes real.
It's very real because you experienced it. It's not me telling you about an experience. See, God could have told you, I'm going to send my son and sacrifice him, and whether he sent it or not, you wouldn't know it today. But he sent it to those people, and they got to see him die a horrible death, and 3 days later he was standing back up again. Now that'll wake you up. But today we take that as, it should, but today people don't take that as being serious. They're not listening to those things he said, you know, you didn't remember me. Just pushed it aside.
It's just turning the water into wine.
Should have done something.
It turns its thought processes into experience, then you get
the revelation of it.
The revelation of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And the last part of 11, it says, and you feared me not, or you revered me not. God doesn't want us to be afraid of him. What father wants his children to be afraid of him? They want him to honor him and revere him, but not to be afraid of him. I hate that word they use, fear. Fear God. I don't fear my Father. I love my Father. But I also know He has the authority and the power to do what He's got to do with me. But I'm not afraid of God. But I revere Him.
We don't cower down.
No. No. We boldly enter the throne room now. Verse 12 goes on and says, I will declare your righteousness and your works. Well, the word declare isn't right. I don't want to shock anybody, but this word's not right. It should say, I'm going to expose your righteousness and your works, for they shall not profit you. So all these things that people are doing right now on the earth, there's all kinds of people think they can buy their way in the kingdom by donating a bunch to the churches and all these things. Had a lady just recently come to me and say, you know, she wanted to know if I had any kind of a Christmas thing that she could bring her kids to volunteer in to teach them how to give and give back to the community because we're blessed, you know. And I said, well, really I don't. I said, we don't do that stuff, you know. So if you want to do, I said, there's a lot of people out there that will. And I said, I'm not rejecting you. I'm just saying I don't have anything to any program to help you that way. I can give you the truth the best I can do. Then you can do what you want. Okay. I haven't heard anymore, so probably won't. Okay, verse 13. When you cry or call for help is what it should say. Let your companies or your assemblies. What's he saying? Let your worldly churches come and bail you out when you cry for help when it comes to the end, because guess what? But the wind, or what's the wind?
Spirit.
The Spirit. The Spirit shall carry them all away. How many of them?
All
that junk He's going to carry it away. And I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about thought processes.
I like the NAS and the NIV. It says, when you cry out, let your collection of idols deliver you.
Same thing. It's thoughts, idols. Vanity shall take them. Vanity means something worthless and transitory. That's what they are. They're all temporary things that we latch to and want to put value in. There's no value to them at all. Nothing. Only in your mind. But he that puts his trust in me, now we're talking about somebody else, aren't we? See, we're talking about two different thought processes here. One in ego, the carnal mind, and one in the ones who are serving God, going after the mind of Christ. He said, but he that puts his trust in me, that's our destiny. Hello? That's our destiny, to put our trust in him, and we shall possess. He didn't say might. He said shall. That means it's going to happen. Possess the land. What do you think that land is?
The mind of Christ.
It's the mind of Christ. That's the promised land from the Old Testament. The mind of Christ is what we're talking about. And shall inherit my holy mountain. What do you think that is? The kingdom of God. The kingdom of God. What did he say? Lo, the kingdom of God is where?
Within you.
Within you. It's Christ. And shall say, mound up, build up, whatever you want to say. There's several words you could use. Cast up, mound up, build up is all the same thing. Prepare or clear the way, okay? Or the lifestyle. Take up or remove the stumbling block, okay? Take up or remove the stumbling blocks out of the way of my people. This is what God's saying to His first fruit that puts their trust in Him. He said, this is your job. Remove, prepare the way, the lifestyle. Remove all those obstacles and enticements and idols, obstacles. Take it all away. That's our job, is to take somebody else's obstacles, somebody else's idols, to destroy them, get them out of their way so they can see clearly. That's our job.
But he's the one that's going to give you the direction.
But he's saying, take them out. Get them out of the way or the lifestyle of my people. If I get those thoughts of that kind of stuff out of my lifestyle, what's my life going to be like? It's going to be fantastic. Not everybody's going to like you. I had someone...
I guarantee
they won't. I had someone one time called me. They come to the house. We had a meeting. We had a big meeting going. And for... Come and hug my neck. Give me a kiss on the cheeks. I love you. This is so wonderful. And 3 or 4 weeks later, she called on the phone, cursed me, and called me everything in the book. Just called me everything that ain't in the book, I should say. I mean, just ripped me. And I said, what's going on? She said, you're at peace and I'm in hell. And I said, well, come on over. Yeah. I said, you can come on. I got room for you over here. Yeah. You want to live in hell? It's your choice. Okay. You've got to get rid of these obstacles. I was trying to help her, but she didn't want to give them up. So what are you going
to
do?
Yep,
she don't want it to be level. She wants it to be her way of looking at it. So if it's on a 45, that's okay with her. That's where she may. If you want to make your decisions, you got to live by them, don't you?
Right.
Okay. Verse 15. Because thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabits eternity, whose name, that's his nature and character, we understand, right? Is holy. His nature and character is holy. He says, I dwell in the high and holy places, not with, but in him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit. He said, I dwell where? Not with him, but in him. Remember he said, I dwell in my people. He doesn't dwell with us. He dwells in us. And here's what he's doing there. Here's a reason for him dwelling in us. Look what it says. To revive. Revive, to relive. Right? You understand what relive means?
It means you were alive before.
You were alive before and you're going to do it again. We were with him before the foundation of the world. Job 38:5, I think it says, where were you at, Job? Weren't you with me when the morning stars sung together? Okay. But here's what he's here for. To revive the spirit of humility. Not the spirit of the humble, but the spirit of humility. And to revive the heart or the mind of the contrite ones. The word contrite literally means broken. So I'm here, God's saying, I'm living in you to revive the spirit of humility and to revive the mind of the broken. The people that have been broken and crushed. That's the ones he's after. As long as I'm prideful and arrogant, you think God's going to do much with me? He's going to let me run around and bump into walls and knock bumps on my head and skin my shins and whatever until I get tired of getting hurt. Until I say, hey, I've had enough of it. When I've had enough, then I'm going to change. Verse 16, because I will not contend forever, neither will I always be always wroth. The word wroth is not really good because we thank God being angry, don't we? It said he's displeased. That makes more sense. I can be not pleased with my children the way they do things, but that don't mean I'm angry with them. See, I'm just displeased with them.
The way you hate them.
No. Just like the New Testament, same thing. It's anger and wrath. It's passion and desire. See, they chose the words from their natural understanding in translating the Scriptures, and that's our job to ferret through all that stuff. You know, it's the glory of God to conceal the Word, and the honor of kings is to search it out.
You're still in control when you're correcting your children.
Yep.
You get plumb and rage and out of control.
That's not correction.
That's the difference between the rock.
That's right. Because the spirit should fail me or grow faint before me, and the souls or the breath of man which I made. He said they would fail if I didn't do it the right way. Okay? God's got a way of doing things that's going to work out. He's not going to always be displeased. Because the iniquity of his covetousness or his unjust gain was I displeased again. And I smote him. I hid from him and was displeased. And he went on what?
Backsliding.
What'd you say?
Backsliding.
Well, the word backsliding literally isn't in the writing anywhere. That's an interpretation from the English. It should say literally about apostasy and idolatry. I went on in my apostasy and idolatry. The word frowardly, King James. It should say from in apostasy and idolatry. For years, I never realized that that word, Lisa, wasn't even in the Scriptures. That's something man put in English translations. I don't like the word, but I know it's not there anyway. Okay, he went away in idolatry and apostasy in the way of his what? It says heart in King James, but it's the mind. Okay? You can go and let me read you a couple of verses real quick. I'm going to give you some verses. I'll read a couple of them. Judges 17:6. 17, verse 6. In those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Does that sound like what he's talking about there? They did what they wanted to in their idolatry and their apostasy in their own minds. It's also in Proverbs 20, in Judges 21, 25, excuse me. It's also in Proverbs 16, 2 and Proverbs 21, 2 about people doing what's right in their own eyes. And God didn't say you couldn't do it. You'll just reap what you sow. That's all. So that all four of those, Judges 17, 6, Judges 21, 25, Proverbs 16, 2, and Proverbs 21, 2, all tell you that man does what's right in his own eyes because there was no judge in the land. What's the land again? It's us, see, our mind. And if the Christ isn't there ruling, sitting on the throne, there's no judge in the land, is there? He's the judge.
What was the last verse again?
Last verse was Proverbs 21, 2. Okay. Okay. Verse 18. I have seen his way of life, his actions, okay? And will heal him. Whoa. He didn't say he had to do anything. Didn't have to say anything, did he? He just said, I will heal him. That's amazing that just
so he said, seen his ways.
Well, yeah. He saw the ways of man.
Yeah.
He said, and I'm going to heal him.
Yeah.
I will lead him also. Who's given the direction? God is. And restore, do you hear what he said? Restore. That means there must have been a storage of it there somewhere before, didn't it? And he said the word is what? Comfort. Well, let's take that word out and put what it really says. It says compassion. I'm going to restore compassion to him and to his mourners. All going to get it. Compassion's coming back, whether they like it or not. Verse 19, another powerful verse. I create, okay? It means to select, to choose, or to make, or prefer the fruit of the lips. So what you say sometimes, you wonder, why did I say that? It wasn't your choice sometimes. That ain't no cop-out now that you can just say anything you want to. Say, God made me do it.
You can say it and then say, love your heart.
Yeah, that one won't work. You know, God won't buy that one, I'm sure.
It doesn't.
Okay. Now, the word through the lips, what do we think about it? Okay. Well, in the root of this word, it speaks of germination. Saying words to germinate something. It's like putting, like, see, we all have that egg in us, right? And we're waiting for the Christ to come upon us just like it did upon Mary. And the Holy Spirit came upon her and she was impregnated, okay?
By
the words, see? And that's the same meaning this word has here. It has the root word of this word means to germinate, by the words uttered. Same thing. So it says, I'll create those words that will cause people to germinate. And when we speak by the Spirit of God, not by our understanding, those words can cause people to be germinated, to be impregnated by the Spirit of God.
And He gives the increase.
And we drop the seed, and God gives the increase. See? Don't worry about it. Right. And then He says, peace, peace, shalom, shalom, peace, peace, to him that is afar off. That don't sound like a good guy, does it? And to him that's near.
All of them.
What would that, if you put that together, all that's afar off and all that's near, what would that be? Would that be all of them? If they say I'm sorry and beg for it.
Yeah. If I don't do that, about 10%,
maybe. They wouldn't be at all then, would they?
I don't think
it'd be all. Okay. So he says, saith the Lord, and I will heal them. I will heal him. Him being humanity. Okay? But the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest. The sea, what is the sea?
Humanity.
It's humanity. When humanity cannot rest, whose waters or words, hear me? It's their words, cast up mire and dirt or calamity. There is no peace. There's no shalom, saith my God, to the wicked. He's not talking about people. In Proverbs 2, and I want to turn there and show you this. Proverbs 2. Because the righteous shall remain or dwell permanently in the land, and the perfect or the upright, the ones with integrity, shall remain in it, but the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and the transgressors shall be rooted out of it. We're not talking about two classes of people again. We're talking about the wicked in each one of us is going to be rooted out, and the only thing left is the righteous is going to remain in, the Christ is going to remain in the earth. He's not giving it up to anybody.
On the wicked,
yep.
Back in verse 19, it says, I will heal him.
Mm-hmm.
And in when the Adam
go ahead.
Was taken, I mean, the mark was put on him. Isn't this, I mean, when the mark was on Adam, isn't this the healing he's talking about?
Mark was on Cain. Oh, you're talking about the mark of six. Okay, the mark of man, humanity. Yeah, okay.
Isn't that the healing that
sure.
you're talking about?
Sure. He's just going to erase that mark off of him.
Right. Because man doesn't realize it's already gone.
Yeah.
He's going to do it again.
Absolutely.
Continually do it.
Yeah. And even after God does things, like erases that mark that was put on us, that ignorance he removes, we're still going to do ignorant things because we're still going to be children. Children do what?
Ignorant.
Children do some silly things sometimes. We did when we were children, and all other children do the same thing. How do they learn if they don't get the grace and mercy to make a mistake?
And God's children has no age on them.
That's right. But it's maturity level that we go through. You know, we could be 80 years old and still be babies in God if we don't grow up. And why not get it now so we don't have to go through it later? Why go back around the mountain again? Let's get it over with. Let's go and grow up. It's much easier. Like the old Fram commercial, you can pay me now, or you can pay me later.
But you're
going to pay me. It's cheaper up front. The longer you wait, the more it costs. So get it over with.
That smacks of reincarnation.
What does?
Pay me now or pay me later.
No, it's not. What I'm saying is you have to be purified. It's easier to be purified now than later. That's all. You're not going to come back and go through it again like that. You have to be purified. Everybody's going through the fire. And if we don't go through the fire now and gain from it, because everybody's getting fire, you know, guess what? You can either get bitter or you can get better about it. And I want to get a little better about it as far as I can go. And when the time comes, I want to be the one on his white horse. You know, the one he rode in Revelation when he said, you know, Dave, you need to get another horse. You're just too close. I want to be that close.